So Nia, the MacBuzz, it happens. Natasha Sather works with different formats such as video, performance, computer art and sound in both solo works and group projects. Her work focuses on the socio-political and shows the processes underlying the construction of industrial society. One of her many projects is www.bioswap.net, an online CV exchange platform that she created to allow artists and cultural managers to borrow and swap elements from their CVs. In conjunction with the seminar on artistic research, thinking and teaching art between practice and theoretical speculation, Sonia talks to Natasha Sather. Natasha Sather, artist, works and lives in Berlin.
I work in very different fields and media, mostly research-based practice, interdisciplinary, and trying to make sense of some of the existing hierarchies and power structures and trying to find out how one can question them.
Artistic research. A convention.
It's kind of a new convention that, okay, let's call this, there's so many people doing it, so let's give it a name. And before that, you were always thinking that you were doing something odd, but in a way it made sense to do something odd because it really raised questions. And I'm worried that, you know, once it's officially named, that it's not a question anymore.
The futility of defining artistic research.
It's not helpful to define what artistic research is. I'm not sure if it's interesting also. It's interesting for, you know, for certain institutions, and it's interesting for funding bodies so that they can put a name on things. But I don't necessarily think that it's helpful for the practice itself.
Boundaries as a fundamental aspect of research.
Research for me has like very different levels, and I always feel that there's a lot of failure in it, and that these failures or these boundaries of what you're capable of doing and the boundaries that you meet while you research something are actually a very important part of the research. And because that's the points where you can ask questions. Why is that? Or, you know, why is it this way? And that's how I enjoy most doing research.
The importance of direct contact when carrying out research.
This very banal and simple level of like looking something up on Wikipedia. What I think it's not artistic. This is what everybody does, you know, in society. But then there's this thing that, you know, there's something that you don't understand and you think like, why is this? And then you just go and talk to people about it, or you go to the place and look at the place and try to make sense of, you know, of it spatially or geographically, politically. And for me, it's really one of the most important parts is talking to people.
The concept of struggle in artistic practice.
I don't know if there's a knowledge that enables a practice. I think it's always this struggle for being able that makes you do things, you know, where you're constantly, or at least with myself, I'm constantly struggling for not losing my language and struggling for not feeling completely powerless. And the reason to do things is this struggle of trying to not lose my language and to trying to gain some sort of agency that I feel, you know, trying to make sense, basically.
The search for skills.
The practice is looking for the abilities every day again and again, because it's not that you find an ability and then you can use it like a recipe. It's the moment you use it and you think this is working, it's gone again. So you have to like constantly, it's a constant process of searching for the abilities.
The usefulness of art.
I'm not so invested in the question of, you know, what art can be or what can it be useful for, or it's just this common agreement that people call the things that people do art, and I don't really care so much what you call it.
The relationship between art and politics, a constant process of translation and interpretation.
About the question of the political, I just read, or I just basically talked to a scholar that is teaching in Bard College in New York, and he talked about the political as a constant process of translation and interpretation. And basically not a translation in the sense of like that there's a fixed meaning attached to each word, but that it's a sort of radical approach to translation, which like constantly negotiates the meaning of things. And that's the basis of the political, you know, to negotiate what does this mean? You know, to not take anything for granted. And I think that's the beginning of every political practice.
The use of art spaces.
The purpose of art spaces was, or you know, how you could use art spaces or abuse art spaces, is to use them to kind of make knowledge that is usually very exclusive and elitist accessible to the public, and kind of give space to have experience with this kind of knowledge, so that people would lose their fear, and also this would like destroy the hierarchies that are in between people who apparently know more than others.
Art as science popularization.
Especially since the industrialization of the sciences and the commercialization, there's too many parties that are interested in making money with this, and they are trying to find ways, and art seems to be such a perfect partner in popularizing science and making it more humane or making it more funny or more alive or more cultural. And so I think that one has to be very careful not falling into the trap to work into the hands of these industries. Which doesn't mean one shouldn't work about these topics. It's just tricky to find ways around that.
BioSwap, an online platform for swapping elements of curriculum vitae among artists and cultural managers.
BioSwap or BioSwap is basically an internet platform for swapping or compiling CVs for different purposes.
Rejection of the traditional system of CVs.
I never use my CV in, you know, in publications, because I just think that the whole system is completely silly and wrong. That, you know, you think that you understand something about somebody's work or even about the person by looking at where they had exhibited and which country they come from or how old they are, or you know, all these like what kind of education they had. It's all these things that that kind of categorize or evaluate something that I'm not sure whether I feel really uncomfortable in playing along with that.
New ways of rethinking the CV.
So I started with just like inventing CVs of like, okay, let's make a CV of all the body parts that I've ever had broken, for example. Or let's make a CV of all the jobs that I ever made, you know, that I ever had for earning money, or things like that. And then I started like asking other people for their CV, like, can I borrow your CV, you know? And then I would also write, like, I borrowed this CV from so-and-so. And then at some point I felt like, oh, maybe more people would be interested in doing that. And so I came up with this internet platform to, you know, where other people could then also swap their CVs.
Biography swapping.
There's also this other part on BioSwap, which I think is equally important, is, you know, there is, I don't want to deny that there is moments when a CV, when you need a CV in order to apply for money or, you know, these kinds of things. And there's moments in your life when you might have been sick or depressed or just not in the mood to produce work. And then you have these funny gaps in your CV and they always look like really ugly. So I thought, you know, to ask institutions to provide their name for people who want to assemble a CV, so that you have official permission to use their name to say, like, you know, to just fill up the gaps of, like, yeah, you know, I've done a project here and there. So this is the other element of BioSwap that I think both are. The one is to kind of dismantle and make fun of the whole CV thing, so that eventually it might just, like, be so silly that people just drop it. And the other one is really this very practical use of it.
Art as part of the capitalist industry of creativity.
It happens on two levels. It happens on the commercial level of, you know, like, really making art production part of the capitalist system in the marketplace. And it's happening in the way that it's also standardized and trying to be made part of the creative industries.
Art as part of the capitalist industry of creativity.
Co-opting and incorporating these activities into something that is being made productive and functional in this very, you know, late capitalist way that it's so hard to grasp, and that's why it's so hard to push away, because you always feel like you're dreaming. You think, like, well, you can't catch it, you know. It's not like a decent enemy that you can, like, see, there it is, you know, this is my enemy and I have to fight it. But it's inside of you. It takes control over your body, over your everyday life, over all your parts of your practice, and that's where it's so tricky to get it out of your system. And I think that's one of the really big challenges.
Artistic practices as a driving force for emancipation.
I'm not an advocate for the arts, because I even don't know whether my practice, you know, whether I always feel very odd, like, it's more out of convenience that I call myself an artist, because I'm it's kind of tiring to having to explain so much. But in the end, you know, I don't care about what you call it, and I don't think I feel I need to defend the art, you know. But what I really want to defend is any kind of practice that is trying to be to promote emancipatory activities and structures that are, you know, developing non-capitalist ways of living, of producing, of communicating, communities that have a sense of solidarity.
Makba.cat